You're listening to WERU-FM, 89.9 Blue Hill, 102.9 Bangor, and streaming online at WERU.org, your community radio station. And this is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Amy Brown and Meredith DeFrancesco for January 10th, 2008. And today we have a really packed half hour for you. First, we're going to be talking with two of the organizers of an anarchist meeting that's going to be taking place in Portland this weekend. They'd really love it if as many people as possible from this area made the trip to attend. And then you'll also get an invitation from one of the spokespeople for the Natural Resources Council of Maine to come attend the final public hearing on whether or not Plum Creek land in northern Maine should be rezoned to allow them to build a massive development. That meeting is scheduled to take place on January 19th in Greenville. So first, we're going to start hearing about the conference that's coming up this coming weekend. We'll have the two organizers introduce themselves.
My name is Annie Sainamond. I'm a member of the Northeast Anarchist Network, and I have been organizing with other members of the 207 Collective here in Maine for a New England subregional assembly. The 207 Collective is a loosely organized group of individuals in the greater Portland area, and we function along the same lines as the Northeast Anarchist Network in our points of unity.
My name is Emily Hill. I've been working also with the Northeast Anarchist Network and the 207 Collective, and also doing work with the Portland Free Picnic, which is kind of like a Food Not Bombs deal. The 207 Collective kind of came together because there were a lot of people in the area who were very much into the anarchy but didn't really have a group of people that were also motivated. So with these collectives and different things we're working on, it's really just a way to pull new people in and give people an outlet for that kind of work. So with this meeting that we're hosting this weekend, it's been very interesting because we've gotten a lot of new folks from northern Maine who are interested in this kind of stuff and have never had other people who have really identified with them. So that's why it's very exciting for us, at least. And it's been a small group of us that have organized it this time around. Probably five or six people have made up the agenda and all of that stuff. To me, anarchy is the rejection of the idea that society has all of these boundaries that have been created before any of us were born by people we didn't know. And as a social cause, it's really just the idea that I have no reason to abide by those. I didn't come up with those, and I have no attachment to those. And by realizing that, you get this sense of freedom. And when you have that sense of freedom and responsibility for what happens to you, it's this incredible power, and it feels like you can really do whatever you want, because who's going to stop you? As deciding, okay, it looks like there are a lot of people who need food in this town, so we're going to get food and we're going to bring it to them. It's the idea that if you don't do something, then who is going to do it?
So when you're talking about these boundaries being put into place, you're talking about things that are you saying you're sort of evaluating laws and borders and rules in terms of whether or not they make sense as opposed to just accepting them?
Exactly. Like ideas that we have about gender. I had no say in someone saying way back, girls wear dresses. Why should I wear a dress if I don't like dresses just because I'm a girl? It doesn't make a lot of sense. So it's really just the sense that unless there's something that you personally have come up with and agree completely with, there really isn't a whole lot of reason to abide by it as far as social constructs go.
Now, how would people in an anarchist community deal with someone who did something that was offensive or in some way hurt other members of the community?
That's probably the hardest question that anarchists get asked, and we get asked all the time. I don't know. That is an extremely tough question, and I think it would come down to the other people in that community. It would have to be a very case-by-case basis. But to say this crime resolves in this punishment is just, it's so distant. And I feel like that's really the beauty of anarchy, is that you can talk to people. We don't realize that we can talk to people and communicate and find out what did happen and why did you do this, and is there a reason? Did something else happen, and is it something that we can help you change, which would make you a happier person who wouldn't necessarily do these things. And in all cases, that wouldn't work. But I think it's a good place to start, and I think it's a better system than we have in place right now.
So you're talking about dealing with things in terms of a smaller community and presumably other people doing the same as opposed to a global structure. So if somebody did something that was geographically distant that harmed other people, and the reason I'm asking this and pursuing this is because I think this is the thing I hear at least most often from people who have a criticism of anarchy is, what would you do about somebody who did something terrible that affected all of us, like pollution caused by like Bhopal in India and Dow Chemical, something like that?
Yeah, and I feel like if there were a perfect utopian anarchy community, there wouldn't be the things you speak about, like big corporations and stuff like that, that would have the power to do that without being shut down because the people who are consuming that didn't agree with it. But like I said, it's a very tough thing, and I don't feel like we necessarily have an answer for it, but I don't think anyone else does either. I think that the thing that people don't realize is, not only is it taking on this idea that we're free people and we're born free, but also with that comes this huge responsibility to be like, okay, if I act out this way, no one else had power over me to tell me to act this way, so it's all my fault. And I think when people can't play, you know, the victim and stuff like that in a lot of situations, it really does change the way that people act. Let me pass you off to Annie.
Okay.
To better answer this.
I think one important thing to keep in mind about an anarchist system is that it is made up of small self-managed workers' collectives, small communities, and large corporations are held accountable in that they are owned by a group of people, and those people are accountable in turn for things like large oil spills or pollution of the environment. One of the myths of anarchy is that or of anarchism, is that without government, society would collapse. But in fact, the thing that would be holding it together is the fabric of small collectives and communities where people are held accountable for their own actions and for the actions of those in the community around them.
How did you start learning about anarchism yourself? Was it something that you picked up on from a friend, or did you stumble across it by yourself, or how did you learn about it? And what has your path been like in educating yourself about it?
Well, I grew up in a rural small town in Maine, so I didn't have much education on anarchist perspectives. Growing up, I think I identified with many of the principles or points of unity of most anarchists, but I never put a name like anarchism on it until maybe the past couple of years, when I started learning more about anarchist movements throughout the past two or three centuries.
And I'm going to guess that that isn't something that someone in a formalized school environment introduced to you, that that was something that you somehow came across on your own.
Yeah, that's certainly true.
So how did you find that? Were you at one of the book fairs, or did somebody, you know, hand you something to read or just start talking with you? I'm just wondering how more people are learning about this.
Well, I think just the term anarchist has a large negative connotation surrounding it. And so naturally, I would hear people asking me, are you an anarchist, or do you believe in anarchism? And not understanding what that term meant, I went online, which is a great resource, and I searched the web and found interesting articles about the subject, and then branched out reading through books and personal accounts, magazines, speaking with other self-identified anarchists.
Now, why do you think people were asking you that? Was it based on appearance? Because I think sometimes people assume that, you know, black hoodie, kind of, you know, Carhartts, that there's a uniform or protest, the black bloc kind of thing. Is it so common in certain areas that people would just ask that question just of anyone that they met?
Well, I think it was sort of the opposite of it being common in an area where I grew up. I believe I held sort of radical viewpoints on many political issues, and other issues involving race, gender, sexuality. And so people were searching for a label, and anarchism wasn't familiar to them. And so they asked if I was an anarchist, not really understanding my own politics or the term itself.
So it wasn't somebody who was an anarchist themselves necessarily coming and asking you in a positive way. It was. Is it sort of similar to, you know, in past generations calling somebody a communist? Is it, was it used as a slur, or was it, were people genuinely curious?
I think I've seen a shift, even in the past couple of years, to curiosity. But I would definitely agree with you that it has been used as a slur, much like communism. And I have been called an anarchist in the past. And that word itself was used as sort of an insult.
Hmm. So do you want to switch the phone back again, or do you want to go into talking about what's going to be going on this weekend, coming up this weekend?
I think I'll hand that over to Emily. We've got an agenda in front of us.
All right. So on Saturday, we have our, there's always a meeting attached to these. So it's a basically a big meeting where everyone gets together, and this time we're focusing on individual groups. This is all in New England. I don't know if that's been mentioned. So it's different groups coming from all over New England talking about what they've done, what they've accomplished, what they need in order to keep doing what they're doing. We're also going to be doing caucus meetings, which is where you go into however you identify in a caucus, be it queer or a worker. There are six different caucuses. Any one of the different caucuses, I always forget. Women identified, female bodied, queer, trans, workers,
people of color,
and differently abled. So we have a few minutes for those different people to meet and just get to know each other so they feel comfortable within the group. Oh, and then at the end, which is very exciting, we're having an organizing skills and direct action workshop, which is put on by a bunch of really cool folks in this area. And that's going to be about 4 hours long. So it should be very, very interesting just to get the nitty-gritty on how to do stuff and get out there and become really active.
I was asking Annie earlier how she first learned about anarchism, and this sounds like it would be a good opportunity for someone who wanted to learn more to jump in. Are people who haven't been involved at all welcome to show up for the first time to something like this, or do you want people who are already working in some kind of affinity group?
Oh, no, we would love to have new people. I think that's, for me, that's the really exciting part about this, is we've already gotten a response from a lot of people who have been like, listen, I've never done anything like this before. Can I still come and talk? And we're really looking forward to having those people, because there really is a lot of interest in Maine that hasn't been, you know, all focused in one area. But if we can get them to come in and be like, hey, this is who I am, I think it'll be very, very, very cool.
How did you first get involved, Emily? Did you go to something like this or read something or talk to somebody, or what was your path like?
Well, a lot like what Annie said. We actually grew up in the same rural town, Deer Isle, actually.
Close by here?
That's right. And I guess I realized that I didn't agree with a lot of stuff that was going on politically and socially, and didn't really understand it and understand why it was happening. And then it actually took dropping out of college to realize that it just wasn't a social construct that I could fit into. And I had put the word anarchy to it before, but I guess at the same time, I never really knew the rest of the anarchist community. So it was hard for me to say I was an anarchist without talking to other anarchists and realizing what it actually meant to live in an anarchist way. So actually this summer, I went to the Northeast Anarchist Network meeting in New York City, and it was incredibly cool to be surrounded by what is like 40 other folks who are all interested in the same things and all really excited about getting out there and doing stuff. And I guess that's when I realized that it was a place that I could get stuff done.
Did you and Annie kind of connect with each other in terms of that before you left Deer Isle, or did you?
We were very good friends all throughout elementary school and high school. But I think we both kind of found it separately. We both moved off the island at different times and went our separate ways, kind of. But now the community in Portland kind of brought us back together as far as that goes.
Do you have any message for anyone who is maybe kind of rural and isolated and doesn't have somebody else in their community to connect with around this?
Well, I know very well how far everything is away from everything else in Maine, and how it's really tough to be like, okay, there's this meeting about something I don't necessarily know about, but I'm interested in, all the way in Portland, that could be 4 hours away or something. But it's really important to get out there and just learn everything you can about it, because that's when things start getting really exciting. And it's very easy to be lazy, but I feel like that's very, I don't know. It's not good for the soul. So I would just say to get out there and learn what you can and talk to everybody that you see.
Is there going to be a ride board or anything like that for people who might be interested in carpooling?
We don't have one set up for Maine, but if people were to email either of us, we could see if there was anyone else coming from that area. That would be ehill@riseup.net. That's mine. And Annie's is stamand@riseup.net.
S-T-A-M-A-N-D?
That's right. So we are hosting the New England Anarchist Sub-Regional of the Northeast Anarchist Network January 12th and 13th at the Meg Perry Center, located at 644 Congress Street in Portland, Maine. Saturday's events will start at 10 o'clock, and we should conclude by 6 p.m. Sunday, we start at 10:30, and we'll probably be out of the space by 5 o'clock.
And the email addresses that you gave earlier, are those the same for more information about this?
Yep.
Is there a phone number as well that you want to give?
Email would be the best way to contact
okay.
us. It might be important to note that we are offering housing
okay.
for anyone coming from outside of the area. And the general themes of this weekend are networking and communication, and we're just working on introducing people to anarchist theory, history, and current projects going on in this area that people can plug into.
So if people can't make it on the Saturday, they can still come on the Sunday?
Absolutely. Sunday might be the more important day, because we're breaking into sub-regional and local projects to form working groups for important issues.
Do people need to register in advance at all?
It would be nice for us to know how many people are coming so okay. we can plan the events, but there's no need to register.
And is it going to be sort of a Food Not Bomb style kitchen, or are people doing potluck, or what about food?
Food will be provided. Saturday night, there's also a benefit show for Mexico Solidarity Network in Portland, so that'll sort of tie into the day's events.
Who's going to be performing at that?
A lot of local bands from Portland. There are six of them. It's a, I would say, a punk and dance techno kind of show.
And what about childcare?
Childcare can be provided. There's a childcare section at the Meg Perry Center.
Okay.
So people are welcome to bring babies or children.
Okay. Let's see, anything else people should know about? It sounds like it's accessible for anyone who needs, you know, ramps or anything like that, since you're going to be having one of your caucuses is going to be for people who are differently abled, right?
Absolutely. And for housing, we do have safe houses, non-alcoholic, drug-free houses for people, and we'll have a variety of activities that are all ages. You know, we want to be very inclusive and welcome everyone into this process we're creating here.
If you're not able to make it to the conference this weekend and you'd like to do some reading on the issue, some of the reading material that was recommended by Emily and Annie are The People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn, anything from the Zine Library at the Meg Perry Center in Portland, that's where the conference is going to be held, the Northeast Anarchist Network's website, www.neanarchist.net, and any books by Inga Musco. Next, we're going to be talking with Judy Burke of the Natural Resources Council of Maine about the final in the series of hearings that's taking place into whether or not Plum Creek's land in northern Maine should be rezoned from forestry to a status that would allow them to build a massive development.
Glad you contacted me, because we are trying to ensure that people aren't shy about going up to Greenville.
This is the last, and it was rescheduled from December. This is the last in the series of public hearings that LURC, or the Land Use Regulatory Commission, is going to be holding into the issue of whether or not the public thinks that they should grant the rezoning for Plum Creek's proposal in the Moosehead Lake region. And why is this one so important?
Well, this is the last time that Maine people have an opportunity to let LURC, the Land Use Regulation Commission, know their opinion about Plum Creek's massive development proposal for the Moosehead Lake area. January 19th is a Saturday up in Greenville. They've actually set a snow date as well for January 26th, just in case.
The way it's been set up in the past, I think this was true for all three hearings, although I only attended the one in Augusta, was they had everyone sign up ahead of time and indicate whether they were pro, against, or undecided. And then they broke them up into batches and they alternated like 10 people who were pro, then 10 people who were against. And there weren't that many undecided, but however many they had in a group, and then they just alternated. Is that still the plan?
That is the plan, and they limit testimony for individuals to 3 minutes apiece. So one has to be very to the point about what it is they want to say, what it is they want to tell the commission. It's very important that the commission hears from people from all over the state who share the concern that, you know, they're basically selling our children's heritage and our state's heritage to this company if they do buckle under and allow the rezoning of this massive area of land.
And in a nutshell, the rezoning issue, for listeners who may not have heard any of our previous coverage of this issue, Plum Creek bought the land at about $200 an acre on average because they knew that it was zoned as forestry, and now their plan is to build massive developments in the area, but they need to have it rezoned in order to do that and make this huge profit that they would like to make.
Right, and Plum Creek's goal is to build 2,300 housing units, 2 resorts, 5 commercial development districts, all north of Greenville. And Greenville, as probably most WERU listeners know, is sort of the gateway to the Moosehead area. It's the town, the downtown of Moosehead, as it were. And they're talking about moving all this other development up into the undeveloped areas, such as Lily Bay Peninsula, Brazoway Lake Peninsula, the north side of Long Pond, all sorts of places where it's completely inappropriate.
And what I've been hearing is that a lot of people who support the plan think that this is the only way that they're going to protect their access, and also that a great deal of land is going to be put into conservation. There seems to be a misconception that Plum Creek is donating a large amount of land that would be completely undeveloped, but when you look further into it, that's not quite the case.
Right. The land that would be put into conservation, first of all, is being purchased for $35 million for the most part. The second thing is that the conservation terms are definitely, a lot of that land isn't what you and I would think of as conservation. It would include septic sludge spreading, power lines, gravel mining, water extraction, all sorts of things of this nature would be done on that land. In fact, the Attorney General's office issued a memo with a lot of concerns about the land. I don't have it right in front of me, or I could give you a quote from it, but they expressed many concerns about the conservation easement and the terms.
Natural Resources Council of Maine has a website that has a lot of information on this. It's nrcm.org, where people can go and read up on the issue if they're thinking about testifying. Are there other places as well that you would recommend?
Well, I think our website is most complete, and we also have carpooling information. A lot of people have talked to me who live in, let's say, Belfast or Ellsworth or somewhere, and they feel guilty about driving all the way up to Greenville alone and would like some company. And we do have carpooling arrangements that can be set up if they call 1-800-287-2345. Or they can find out about them on the web as well. And we at NRCM are going to have a van or maybe two leaving from Augusta that morning. So give us a shout or check our website, and please do come up and join us.
And another place that has a lot of information, is LORC's own website, which you can get to through links from maine.gov. And it has all of the official documents, and probably it would take, I don't know how many weeks to read through all of them, but if people want to go ahead and look at that, it's just overwhelming how much information is there. One of the other things that I think is different about this public hearing than other kinds of environmental public hearings that I've been to in the past is that a lot of the people who normally speak at these things, who know a lot about the ecosystem in Maine, are interveners this time around, which means they have a special legal status where they were speaking at another set of hearings presenting their testimony. And so because of that, they are not able to speak at the public hearings, although they may attend. So a lot of the folks that we normally may rely on to go to these public hearings and speak out aren't able to speak at the public hearing, which makes the numbers of people speaking out slightly off balance, it seems.
That's correct. In fact, no employee of an organization that's an intervener should be speaking out. I, as an individual, Judy Burke, I am not allowed to go and speak out at one of these public hearings. But you can, all you listeners out there. So I really, really encourage you to do so.
And you're having people just kind of informally sign up and let you know if they're going to be speaking?
That's correct. We're just trying to keep tabs on people, you know, in terms of how many people may be coming to speak. And also because we have the vans, we want to offer that to folks as well. So if you check our website, nrcm.org, you can get all that information there.
And if someone was considering going but they had some questions about how to do this or they were a little bit nervous, can they contact you about that as well?
Absolutely. They can call me, Judy Burke, or Kate Cleaver. Either one of us could be glad to help you. I'm at 800-287-2345.
Okay. And again, that is January 19th in Greenville. Is it the same schedule, 10 to 1 and then 2 to 6, I think?
Yes, if for speakers, and we encourage everybody who can to speak, you should show up at 9 o'clock to get a number because the numbers go fast. And the earlier you get a number, the earlier you'll get to speak. So I'd recommend that.
Do they let people keep talking until they're done, or do they just end it at 6?
They've been ending them at 6. In fact, in Portland, a number of people who attended were not able to speak. We don't anticipate that will be true in Greenville. But in Portland, they ended it at 6, and some people had not spoken. In Greenville last time, they ended it at 3 because not enough people showed up. And that's why we need more people.
And where in Greenville is it?
It's at the Greenville High School Auditorium, which is right downtown. If you go to the blinking light in Greenville, which is downtown, hang a left, you'll see it on the left. You can't miss it.
All right. Well, thanks for talking with us today, Judy
Burke. Thank you very much, Amy.
Natural Resources Council of Maine. Thank you. That website, again, is nrcm.org, and also the LURC website, Land Use Regulatory Commission's website, you can get to by going to maine.gov and following links. You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Amy Brown and Meredith DeFrancesco. You can hear archived programs of this show and other local news and public affairs programs on the WERU website, which is at weru.org. And you can reach us with story ideas or feedback at news@weru.org. Just put Radioactive in the subject line. Thanks for listening and acting. Hightower's coming up next, followed by Free Speech Radio News, Democracy Now!, and a night of great music here on your community radio station, WERU.